It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take the tap and ahead for Nudibara out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company, and Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. It is Thursday, December 5th, 2019. It's 2:53 in the morning, and it's my official duty to welcome you into episode 115 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Welcome to room 515 of the Spring Hill Suites in Raleigh, North Carolina. Coming to you on location from my hotel room, having just gotten back here after Ohio State's, frankly, stunning 74-49 win at number 7, North Carolina. The number 6 Buckeyes came into the Dean Dome and controlled the game for basically the duration. Shook off kind of a weird, slowish start to the game. Only trailed for 4 minutes and 52 seconds, and they led the Tar Heels for 34 minutes and 54 seconds, and they won this game running away with it. In the second half, they outscored the Tar Heels 45-22. They improved to 8-0 with the win. They're up to the number, they're ranked number 2 nationally, according to KenPom.com. They're 8-0. It's their best start since 2014, and Chris Holtmann and his players don't like to talk about making statements, and they don't like to look at one game as being vindication that they are at a certain level. They prefer to look at a larger body of work, but a win like this on a night like this in a building like that does not come around very often, and I think that this is a game that merits a 3 a.m. podcast. It's a game that merits multiple stories, all of which you can already find at BuckeyeExtra.com. It merits some conversations, so I'm going to do my best in my sort of still amped up but also somewhat sleep-deprived mind, try to break down a couple of my thoughts from this game, a couple of key takeaways that I had from watching it, and what it was like to be there tonight, because it was a great environment. It was a great experience. It's a great place to watch a basketball game. You can just feel the history when you walk in there. You see it hanging from every banner imaginable. So we're going to get into that as best we can, and then look at what's up next for Ohio State, because I've got a tricky feeling about what might be immediately on the horizon now for the Buckeyes. So I did not have time to throw up a poll question. I apologize for that. Hopefully you can all find it in your hearts to forgive me. But no poll question for this podcast. I'll definitely have one before we record. I would say mid-week next week, Ohio State will host Penn State here on Saturday at noon. Then they won't play again until the following Sunday when the Buckeyes go to Minnesota. They have finals next week at Ohio State. So it'll be a little bit of a slower week next week, which means I'm going to take the chance to recharge a little bit and maybe work on a couple of other projects. So we'll only have one podcast next week unless something drastic happens. But there will be a poll question for that one. And if you want to make sure you don't miss the podcast whenever it does drop, please make sure you're subscribed by searching for Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever you find all of your favorite podcasts. That way you won't miss an episode. This one will drop sometime Thursday. I have a 1 p.m. flight. I get back to Columbus around 5:30 or so. So looking very much forward to getting back. And hopefully by the time this gets posted, you've read all the content up on Buckeye Extra, because like I said, a game like this deserved a couple different stories, so we got a lot up there for you. So I'm going to take a quick break and take another swig for the Diet Mountain Dew that I got from the hotel lobby, and then when I come back, let's dive into this game.
When Rosati Windows arrives at an in-home consultation, we always tell our customer that a house can't talk to you, but it typically will give you signs that something isn't right. A home's windows are particularly communicative. Although they don't last forever, a high-quality, well-maintained window could last for many, many years, one such as a Rosati window. However, at some point, they may not be at their best, so listen carefully to what they are telling you and you will know when it's time to have them replaced. Are there drafts? Are they damaged or warped? Do they stick when you close or open them? If you answer yes to any of these, it may be time to call Rosati Windows for an at-home consultation. Learn more at RosatiWindows.com.
All right, so this game kind of started out a little bit weird for Ohio State. There was a lot of talk, obviously, going in about whether Ohio State would be able to handle adverse conditions for the first time, a crowd working against them. This was the first road game of the season, and we're already into December. And with such a young team, including some freshmen being counted on for significant roles, that was a fair question about this team, how it would handle being in a place like this. And there are 21,000 people there tonight, and most of them, not all of them, there's a pretty good Ohio State crowd, but most of them did not want to see Ohio State do well. So Ohio State started the game by giving up a hook shot. They were down 2-0. CJ Walker turned the ball over. He got bumped, called for a travel. And then the next possession, they're down 5-0. It was a weird start to Ohio State. Luther Muhammad loses the ball, but gets fouled, so he gets kind of bailed out. Dwayne Washington misses a three. They get an offensive rebound. Kyle Young gets blocked out of bounds. There's just a couple of seconds left, and when Ohio State tries to inbound the ball, they turn it over. So it's two turnovers the first two possessions. Next possession, Luther tries to feed it to Caleb Wesson from the wing to the post, but does not throw a very good pass. It gets picked off. Not a great start for Ohio State. And then shortly after that, Luther came out for Andre Wesson. And then Ohio State really settled itself from there. It started with Dwayne Washington, who had another big night. He finished with a game-high 18 points. He did need 15 field goals to get there. He finished 4 of 8 from 3, 6 of 15 from the floor overall. Forced the issue occasionally. He did get yanked by Holtman at one point. I think it was during the first half where he tried to make something out of nothing, kind of threw up a little floater from the right block, and it was very easily rejected, and Holtman yanked him pretty quickly for that. But he was effective. He was big early. Holtman pointed out that his early shooting really helped cover up some of those mistakes, and it was a first half that ended with plenty of them. Ohio State had 10 first half turnovers in this game, and that really, I mean, that was the thing that held them back. When you look at Ohio State taking a 29-27 lead into the break, once they took the lead in this game, you got a very clear sense that they were the better team. And I wasn't necessarily that concerned with Carolina putting together a run that was really going to challenge Ohio State. North Carolina has proven itself to be a team that is overly reliant on its star freshman guard. And he's a star. I mean, Cole Anthony, he did finish with 15 points tonight, but he needed 15 shots to get there. He was 4 of 15 from the floor. All of his makes were threes. He was 0 of 7 inside the three-point line. Ohio State, whether it was Luther Muhammad in limited time, or CJ Walker a lot, or occasionally Andre Wesson, they really, really made him work. And then Carolina was further crippled when Armando Bacot, I forget how to say it right now, their second leading scorer, or one of their top three leading scorers, he went out with an ankle injury a couple minutes into the game. Nasty looking injury. Apparently it's only an ankle sprain. He's going to miss a little bit of time, but Carolina looked extremely limited. And as that first half progressed, it started with Dwayne Washington. He had three threes early on. It reminded you of the Villanova game where he came out firing and Ohio State never really let up. Well, in this game, he had the Ohio State's first bucket. He had a three. Caleb hit a three on the next possession. And then Ohio State was trailing 8-6. Dwayne hit a wide open three to make it 9-8, then hit another three to make it 12-8. And you're looking at it and going, well, it's another one of those games for Dwayne. So he had 9 of Ohio State's first 12 points and finishes with 18. He was effective, and he was not afraid of the stage. He was not afraid of the environment, and they needed that early on because, like I detailed just a minute ago, some of those early offensive possessions, it made you wonder how nervous Ohio State might actually be and how prepared they were to be on a stage like this. But his shots early settled them. And then what was interesting to me from there was that EJ Liddell came in and really made an impact very quickly. Now, EJ only ended up playing 15 minutes and 31 seconds in this game, but I was impressed with the fact that he came in and immediately made an impact. He got the ball on the right elbow, turned, spun toward the middle of the court, and hit a jumper. And then two possessions later, came down, got the ball on the left elbow, did the same thing, spun over his right shoulder this time, and drilled a jumper again. And this was, Cole Anthony was out of the game at this point, and Ohio State was starting to establish some breathing room. His first one made it 16-10. His second one then made it 18-12. He looked very composed in those moments. And this is a guy who, when you think back to when the season started, and I wrote about this, how his debut against Cincinnati, his first couple of minutes in the first half there, both Liddell and Chris Holtman talked about how someday he's going to look back on those moments and just kind of laugh and just like look at himself and say, boy, that's not me. He was out of sorts. The game was clearly moving too fast for him. He's trying to do too much. Now, this is a guy that I picked to be Big Ten Freshman of the Year. DJ Carton won that honor in the media poll that I helped conduct, but I picked Liddell because I know that they're going to rely on him significantly for low post scoring. He is a proven scorer. I think he's going to be an elite Big Ten player. And he took those first steps toward that tonight. He looked composed. He looked as calm as we've seen him. He finished with a career high 12 points. He had 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, 1 assist, 1 steal, no turnovers in this game. In a night when Ohio State had 15 turnovers, EJ was not a problem there. And it was funny talking to him after the game because I asked him about being ready to be on this stage and just kind of accepting a moment like that. And he said it was a text message that he got from his mom before the game that basically just told him to remember to breathe and just not get too hyped up. I said, was it really as simple as just a text like that from your mom? And he said, yeah. And well, it clearly worked because he was a really important factor on a night when Caleb Wesson seemed a little out of sorts for much of the game. Now, he finished with 10-9, and you're not going to argue with that on a night when you put a historic beatdown on Carolina. He finished with 6 turnovers and 4 fouls. At least 2 of them, if not 3 of them, were on charge calls, and some of those were questionable. The first one, he got back-to-back charge calls in the second half. One was atrocious. The second one, I didn't get as good of a look at, but I think they were both not great calls, so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt on that. But there were a couple of times in the first half where he got the ball on the block, and he was clearly just anticipating that someone was going to be there to block his shot, and he'd either double clutch, or at one point he triple clutched and ended up getting called for a foul or a turnover. He traveled. You could tell early on that North Carolina's size and its length was impacting him, and I'm interested to see how that affects him going forward. His two-point percentage, I don't have the numbers in front of me for the season, but his two-point percentage is not where it was last season. He's obviously taking more shots from three, and I think he's still contributing at a high level, and obviously the offense continues to really revolve around him in a lot of ways, but this was not his sharpest night of the season. Finishes with 10 points on 3 of 7 shooting, 1 of 3 from three. He was 3 of 4 from the line, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 block, and 6 turnovers on a night, again, when Ohio State had 15. So the Buckeyes did finish with 10 first-half turnovers, and this is against a Carolina team that was only they were only turning teams over on average 11 times a game. And Ohio State has been better this season at taking care of the ball, but I mean, some of these were just not good turnovers, like the ball slipping out of guys' hands or a travel call or just losing it out of bounds. Not the sharpest first half for Ohio State. And so Holtman talked about that. I asked him about that after the game, and it's something to the effect of how they felt good about where they were, even though they were only up 2, because they had really controlled the game for long stretches of that first half. The end of the first half was ugly on both sides. Ohio State only made 1 field goal in roughly the last 7 minutes, and Carolina missed 9 of its last 10 shots. So there were a couple of chances there where Carolina could have really made a move and made it a little bit more of a game. As I kind of look at my notes here, Ohio State was up 29-25 when CJ Walker hit a jumper from the foul line. Carolina pulled back to 29-27 on a wide open jumper. I'm looking for the time on that one. There was 4:16 to go, and from that point all the two teams could muster was a jumper by Garrison Brooks. So we watched 4 minutes and 15 seconds of basketball where 2 points were scored, and it was about as pretty as that sounds. Ohio State turned it over, I think it was 7 times in the last 7 minutes and 40 seconds. So they weren't even, it wasn't even so much that they were missing shots. They just straight up weren't getting shots. But that turned around in the second half. They did not have a turnover in the second half until roughly the midpoint. And then they had a couple there and a bunch when Carolina actually, Roy Williams just pulled his starters and played some guys that never play. There were 3 guys on the court that were averaging fewer than 2 minutes per game at one point. And it gave Carolina a little bit of a spark. The crowd kind of got into it. But once Ohio State pushed the lead in the second half to double digits, which it did fairly early on, a DJ Carton 3-pointer made it 48-36. And it was double digits basically exclusively from that point on. It is funny to look at how things progress compared to how you thought they might go. I obviously wrote a story in Wednesday's Dispatch about how this was seemed like a big game for DJ Carton, playing on a big stage. His game seems to fit that kind of environment, going against Cole Anthony, who's projected to be a top five draft pick. This seemed like a big night for Cole Anthony versus DJ Carton. And instead, Anthony has 15 points on 15 shots, and Carton finished with 8 points, 4 assists, 2 turnovers, 2 steals. He was 2 of 4 from the floor, but all his shots were threes. He played 18 minutes and 39 seconds. I thought the stage was a little big for him. He didn't have his greatest game. I still think you see flashes where he'll really kind of dominate for a couple of minutes of a game, but you can tell he's just still putting it all together. He got beat around a little bit too. He took a couple of shots during that first half that impacted him. I felt like he was a little bit slow to get up. So maybe the physicality took it out of him a little bit. But for Ohio State to come to Carolina and to win like this on a night when Caleb isn't your most dominant player and finishes with 6 turnovers, Luther Muhammad only plays 8 minutes and 28 seconds mostly because of foul trouble. And he gives you 2 points. And Kyle Young, he finished with 9 points. So he was sort of doing Kyle Young things. But on a night when Luther is in foul trouble and Caleb isn't necessarily in the flow of the game, to come win at Carolina by 25 points, I think is impressive, no matter how depleted I feel like Carolina is. So there's this one of the stories that I posted to our website here tonight. Some of the stats of just how historic of a game this was. So the Dean Dome, the Dean Center, opened in 1986. North Carolina tonight shot 27.4%. That's the worst shooting night they've had in the history of the arena. Now, I was 3 in 1986. Nobody on this Ohio State team was even close to being born. Carolina's 49 total points were the third fewest that the Tar Heels had scored on their home court. The 25-point loss was the worst non-conference loss in the history of the arena. The only loss that was worse than that was a 29-point loss to Duke in 2002. The win was Ohio State's biggest against a top 10 team since they beat number 10 Wisconsin by 28 points on March 6, 2011. And then for good measure, in the second half, Ohio State outscored Carolina by 23 points. That is the most lopsided Tar Heels scoring deficit for a half in the arena's history. So there was a lot to take out of this. And I do think ultimately some of this is just, it ends up being one of those games for Carolina. And Holtman said after the game that it was a unique game, sort of in the way that they ran away with it. That's at least the third time this season that Holtman has used that phrase. When Ohio State ran Villanova off the court, he said the same thing because, they were just hitting shots and then the game got rolling and Villanova was never in it. He said at the following game when they played Stetson and won 86-51, and Stetson just could not do anything against Ohio State. And I'm not trying to put Stetson on an equal playing field with Carolina and Villanova, but that's a couple of times this season that Holtman has described his team's performance as unique, which I think tells you something about how they've been able to just dictate things and really play the way that they want to play. No team has topped 57 points in Ohio State. No team has shot better than 37.5%. Both those totals went to Ohio State's last opponent, Morgan State, actually, in a 90-57 win. The 57 points was the most points allowed by Ohio State this season. Just a dominating win overall, in spite of some turnovers and in spite of some issues. I think you're continuing to see that this team is more than the sum of its parts, if that's the way the phrase actually goes. Because like I said, you get 18 from Dwayne tonight. Caleb gives you 10 and 9. Kyle Young gives you 9 and 5. CJ Walker had 10. He was 4 of 8 from the floor. He hit 2 threes. He had 3 rebounds. Andre Wesson had 5. And 9 rebounds. You got a lot of contributions from a lot of guys. And it was interesting, too. We saw Alonzo Gaffney during the first half. I think he continues to battle Justin Arns for that 9th spot in the rotation. But he did get some first half minutes. He didn't really do a whole lot with them. He played 5 minutes and 23 seconds for the game. He finished with 2 fouls, 1 rebound, and 1 turnover. So still raw, still working through a lot there. But you did see him in the first half in some important time. And that's certainly newsworthy. I've had a few people ask me about Musa Diallo, and I did ask about him at Tuesday's interviews. He's still not doing a whole lot. There's been no decision on a red shirt yet. They've sort of discussed it a little bit, but decisions on that won't be made for another couple of weeks, is what Holtman told me on Tuesday. So that kind of wraps up some of the thoughts on the individual players and the game itself. This was my second time at the Dean Center. I was fortunate enough to cover the 2006 game when Carolina and Ohio State dueled to a 98-89 Carolina win, which was just an unbelievable high-level basketball game from start to finish. This was certainly not that. The crowd was not what I remember it being back in 2006, but when you're watching, you know, your team suffer through its worst shooting game in the history of the arena, I think that's to be expected. It was cool to be in an arena that was huge, but it was also explicitly designed for basketball, and everything is pointed toward the court. It reminds me a little bit of Rupp Arena in Lexington. It actually reminds me a little bit of Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. When you go inside, it's so big. There's so much space, and then that space is just filled with people, and there's that the Carolina blue is just everywhere, and it just kind of it sets a tone, and you know where you are, and it was loud. The fans were into it. When Cole Anthony hit back-to-back threes during the second half, one of which was a great NBA three, the crowd started to get a little bit fired up there, but they were all filing out about 6 minutes ago. And the only thing that you really heard toward the end of the game were the Ohio State fans scattered around the arena yelling OH and things like that. So big win for Ohio State. Now I'm going to take another swig here at Diet Mountain Dew, come right back, and then we'll put a bow on this here in a minute.
Hey, football fans, leave the Hail Marys for the game and go for a sure thing when it comes to satisfying your craving. When you pick up Raising Cane's for game day, all you have to worry about is the score, because we've got the food covered. With hand-battered, cooked-to-order, always fresh, never ever frozen chicken fingers, craveable cane sauce, and jugs of freshly made tea and lemonade. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. One love.
All right, so real quick, before we do look ahead to what is immediately on the horizon here for Ohio State, I just want to mention all the content that is up on Buckeye Extra following this game, because we do travel for every game. We value that, and I know you guys value that. So if you're wondering what all is there, there's post-game videos you can find on our YouTube channel. It's Chris Holtman's post-game press conference, and then we also talked to Dwayne Washington and EJ Liddell. So you can see those videos on our YouTube channel. They're also embedded in some of the stories. My post-game, my game recap is on Buckeye Extra. I wrote a significantly lengthy blog post looking at, starting with EJ Liddell, and then looking into what halftime adjustments they made defensively, what they keyed on, how big the rebounding battle was in this game, what they did to try to limit Cole Anthony. There was a lot in the post-game blog, and there's a great Roy Williams quote in there as well at the bottom. So I would say check that out. That's on Buckeye Extra, as well as a look at just how historic this win actually was for Ohio State, and how when you walk out of their locker room, you see history right there in front of you, and you follow history down the hallway until you get to the court. And then on this night, they made a little bit of their own. So those stories are all already up on Buckeye Extra by the time you'll hear this podcast. And also, if you want to listen to the entirety of Holtman's podcast, that will also be on the podcast. Or if you want to listen to all of Chris Holtman's press conference, the entirety of that will also be on the podcast feed. So you can find that on there as well if you want to hear his complete thoughts after the game, because he did he's asked a couple of interesting things about sort of taking in a moment and whether he allows himself to do that. And the short answer is no, he doesn't, but some of the members of his coaching staff do. So you can find all that on Buckeye Extra. So what's interesting to me is, as I sat down and really like started analyzing this Carolina matchup, I just felt like I wasn't too worried about Ohio State winning this game, because I felt like Carolina just had to rely so much on one freshman guard. And even though he is an incredible talent, I just felt like Ohio State was more balanced. And I felt like there was Ohio State had answers there. If Cole Anthony was going to do Cole Anthony things, I felt like CJ Walker and DJ Carton and Luther Muhammad were going to be able to counteract that. And they did. And I mean, nobody else in Carolina scored in double figures, which I guess makes sense when you only score 49. But I wasn't as worried about Ohio State's chances to beat Carolina as honestly I am about Ohio State's chances to beat Penn State. And that actually flies in the face a little bit of what KenPom is telling me. Ohio State's, like I said, number two nationally in KenPom, and Penn State's number 23. But KenPom only gives the Nittany Lions a 19% chance to win on Saturday. Projected final is 71-61 Ohio State. But this is a really good angry, aggressive, physical Penn State team that knows it has had significant recent success against a really good Ohio State team. I think that goes a long way. The Nittany Lions will come in. They're, as of Wednesday night or now Thursday morning, they have the number 12 defense in the nation. They're number 46 offensively. They are a dangerous, dangerous team. You're looking at a team that beat the pants off of Georgetown. At Georgetown, they had a 15-point win there. They beat Bucknell by 28 at home. They beat Yale at home in a barn burner, 58-56. They lost to Mississippi on a neutral court, but then they beat the crap out of Syracuse. And then they also they did likewise against Wake Forest, which I think both those teams are pretty bad. But I think Penn State is pretty good. I mean, that's, you've got Lamar Stevens. You know that he's going to be a hassle. You know he's going to frustrate you. He draws 6.2 fouls per game. That's 90th in the nation. You got Mike Watkins, who's the number four. He's number four nationally in block percentage. He does a lot for them. Miles Dredd is a heck of a player to watch. Is also, I think that's my favorite name in the Big Ten. I think I don't know if I like that name better or Leaky Black for North Carolina, but at any rate, I think Miles Dredd is a fantastic name, and I really think that that's a game. There's the potential for it not to be a great environment. It's a noon game on Saturday when the football team is obviously playing in the Big Ten Championship later that day. I could see it being a little bit of a trap for Ohio State. You're going into finals, so maybe you're a little bit distracted. You know, you've got a little bit of time off, and you're playing a team that is really hungry and really desperate to prove that it can be an upper-level Big Ten team. If I had to do Big Ten power rankings right now, I would certainly have Penn State in the top probably six or seven. I think it's pretty clear that Maryland and Ohio State are at the top. I think then it starts getting murky pretty quickly there, but this is a dangerous Penn State team, and I think that there's a recipe there for this to be a game that Ohio State takes a loss in. Now, I'm not going to out and out project or predict that they're going to lose, because at this point, the way they're playing, it's kind of silly to do that. And Ken Pom will tell you not to bother. If you look at the projections for Ohio State, as it stands right now, for the rest of the season, Ohio State is projected to lose at Maryland on January 7th, a 1-point loss, 68-67, and then at Michigan State to close the season on March 8th, a 68-66 loss. So you're telling me Ohio State's projected to go 29-2 with two losses totaling 3 points. I don't think that's going to be the final result, but I do think that we're getting more evidence by the day that this is a special Ohio State team that might have a pretty incredible ceiling ahead of it here. So I'll have a lot on Saturday coming out of the Penn State game, whatever happens there. Obviously, Ohio State, since the Big Ten has started playing these two early conference games, Ohio State's taken advantage of it and has won both of them. So we'll see if they can continue that, because then they are off for 8 days before they go to Minnesota. And I don't know what to make of Minnesota, but I do know that I think Penn State is a dangerous team, and I think Ohio State needs to be on upset watch on Saturday. So now that I've said that, they'll probably also win that one by 28 and hold them under 57 and 37% shooting, but then that gives us something else to write about. So I'm gonna go get some sleep, and I guess I should mention I did find two CDs here. When I was in Chapel Hill most recently, I was here for a Ben Folds 5 reunion concert, which I think was in 2009, and I remember getting to hit like three or four record stores during the day and actually ran into Ben Folds, which was amazing. There's only one of those stores left, and I went there, and the dude that runs the store was super nice, and I picked up the new album by White Reaper, who I saw open for the Killers last summer, and I'm really digging them. And I also picked up the debut solo album from Dave Koenig, the guitarist for the Killers. I'm interested to hear what that sounds like. I know my brother is a big fan of it, so I'll have some thoughts on those maybe in another week or so. But so I did have some good CD shopping while I was here in Chapel Hill, and had a falafel burger for dinner. That was good too. So as always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for reading. Thank you to Patrick back in Columbus for piecing this all together. I will be back with you in podcast form sometime midweek next week. So until then, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company, and Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. Game day tastes better with Raising Cane's tailgates full of 24-hour marinated hand-battered chicken fingers.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.